Stay in a comfy okay. spot.
You stay in a comfy
stay
spot.
Stay in a comfy
yeah.
spot. That's
great. Okay, it's where are we now? I always think about this. November? Still November, aren't we?
We are still November.
Right. I'm talking to Howarth or Drummond
Hello.
This morning. And I know you won't be surprised, we're actually in the Glen in Ringingo again, which is our sort of favourite venue. It's looking typically autumnal.
It is.
Wet. I can't even see Sheffield today.
No.
But that is the intro. So,
okay,
Howarth, we do know each other.
We do. We're getting to know each other, and we've got to know each other over the last few months, haven't we, since we met networking.
I'd reckon it's over a year.
Is it? Crikey.
I bet it is. I've been coming to...
It's probably true.
Destination Depot.
Yeah.
We've done the Business Zoo.
True, yeah.
In the Hope Valley.
Probably is about a year.
It must be. Well, we did the Fringe, you know, we did the Hope Valley Fringe
right.
event.
Yeah.
Back in...
And I was unaware of that.
Right, so that was so back in April 2018.
Okay. Yeah, so it's post that. I think it's about a year because it was the fact of the Hope Valley Zoo, I think, that sort of piqued my interest because I have a connection to Hope Valley, although I don't live there.
Do you?
I do.
Go on.
Well, there are some which I almost bought. The last house on the right as you go out through Hope before you get to the railway bridge as a young man.
Opposite the college?
Yes. Yeah. Anyway, and I didn't. And whenever I go back, I think, I wonder what my life would look like had I lived there rather than in Sheffield. And the reason I thought about that was at the time my dad lived in Bradwell.
Yeah.
With his then wife, and they had their family thing going on, and he was doing a fairly sort of interesting project to do with raising money for the United Nations, and he and I had an on-off relationship throughout our lives, but that was an on time, and he lived in Bradwell, so I was regularly coming over the back Strines and Bamford and through Thornhill, and yeah.
Are you rallying through Thornhill then?
Yeah, well, and so there's my connection,
right?
And sadly and tragically, Dad had another son who died at 3 months, who was in Bradwell Churchyard, and so from time to time I make a little pilgrimage if it is back there, and you know, pay my respects.
Mm.
And so, yeah, I do have a connection. So when I saw Hope Valley Business Zoo, I thought, it's not on my doorstep, but it feels like
right. you should,
something
well,
I ought to
engage.
Poke my nose into and see what, you know. And I'm glad I did.
Well, yes, because it was funny, the Fringe actually was the first time that I met Steve and Steve.
I
think it was the week they set up.
Yeah.
Because this was the perfect opportunity. They actually rang me up and said, oh, we're...
Yes,
you know, it sounds like
we knew we're here.
Hope Valley Fringe and Hope Valley Business would work, and so they were one of the 35 odd companies that came and got to know each other.
Yeah,
which was quite interesting because at the time I thought it would be quite a good idea. You know, not quite a good idea. It was a good idea to get businesses talking.
Yeah,
but the format was interesting because actually what happened is it was very hard work. We touched earlier before we started talking about different businesses. And there wasn't any real return for ourselves, but it gave the thread of connecting businesses. So ever since then, we've been connecting businesses, but there's not in one venue.
And interestingly, when you start doing that, sort of on the face of it, connecting businesses, which is understandable because people need and want to promote what they do to help their business grow, but you get beneath that and you meet some people. You know, who happen to do whatever they do in business, but they're quite interesting people. You know, there are a number of people I've met just by going business networking that I like being around.
Yeah.
You know, whatever they happen to do in business, it's they're all right. You know.
Well, it is intriguing, having come from a big corporate world. You know, where you've got large constraints, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
I always felt sort of slightly constrained.
Yes.
You go to now the other end of the scale. I was in a networking event yesterday.
Yeah.
The LinkedIn, you know, the LinkedIn local.
Right, yeah.
And you meet the same people.
Yeah.
Same 20 people each time. But each time you find out something slightly different.
Yeah.
And as yet, we haven't done very much business, but you've got to know some interesting people.
Yeah.
And they're starting to talk about it. But this thing about knowing you or knowing connections for about a year, that's a long gestation period.
And I think unless you understand that, you're likely to get fairly frustrated and just stick with the relationship you've already got in your life. And business-wise, you're going to do something else to market your business that on the face of it seems to give you a quicker return, if you like. But for me, business-wise, luckily I understand that it's just about sharing some information, planting seeds, sure, water the seeds. Some will sprout and some will bear fruit, some won't. You just got to understand that that's how it is, and it's not personal, you know. I got a phone call from somebody that I didn't know before the beginning of this year, who rang me and said, can we make an appointment for January because I want to get round to sorting out our wills. Yeah, that's lovely, of course we can, you know. That came a little bit out of the blue, but it's an example.
What, a year in advance?
Well, yeah, probably beginning of last year is when we first encountered them. We've only sort of met networking, but got to know them a little bit and got to like each other a little bit.
Right.
And yeah, just got the contact. Can we book something in for January? Yeah, sure. You know,
I was I'm one of my pet. I think. Well, if you're making diary dates, in the old days, if you put yourself in the diary, that was it.
Yeah. Well, like today for you and I, we've nearly got here a couple of times.
Yes,
you know.
Exactly. But you put it in the diary. Yeah. And if somebody says, "Oh, there's something," you know, I said, "Sorry, I'm already booked up." You know, you keep to that thing. But today was quite a good example of that. 3 or 4 weeks. That's probably about the maximum I book in advance, to be honest.
Yeah.
For work and so on. It took 6 months to prepare them. You know, the idea is get him in the diary, put it in the diary, and then this morning, you know, literally an hour before the meeting,
yeah,
he says, "Oh, can we bring it forward?"
Oh, okay.
Which was surprising.
Yes, I thought you were going to say, I can't make it or something. Well, bring it forward, right?
Can we bring it forward? So that's what I was going to say. And I said, "Oh, well, of course I can." Yeah. So I made the effort.
Right.
And you know, and everything else. But it was quite interesting that they feel that people can change that. And maybe I'm just so old fashioned.
Yeah.
But it's just the idea that they can just pick up a phone, or no worse than that, text you.
Yeah.
So I got the text 10 minutes after he had sent it.
Right.
Which could have been 10 minutes after I'd set off.
It might have been.
Or changing. You know, I'd made plans in advance of a meeting. We brought it forward about 3/4 of an hour.
I mean, you know, I'm old school in the same sense. If I've said I'll see you at 1, and I think I'm gonna be a minute later than that, at some point before 1, I'll get in touch and go, "I'm just running slightly late.
Yeah.
Just wanted to have the courtesy to let you know."
People will probably have a fit when they hear me talking about turning up on time, because my reputation is not good in terms of timing.
But
I think I've upset lots of people in the past in a kind of jovial manner by saying, "Well, I'm always on time when it matters." So yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. So it doesn't. But I will tell everybody what I'm doing. Not
the world is the world is brighter for courtesy.
Yes. Yeah. Exactly. I think. Yeah. So these are old entrenched sort of habits, and now that we can communicate the way we can, it's kind of lost it.
Yeah,
because people can literally change things.
That's an interesting conversation every now and then. You know, it's like, "Oh, why are you on your phone? You're always on your phone. What are you doing on your phone?" That type of conversation, or they are always on their phone, and I just think, well, they're probably just communicating. You know, they may be chatting with a friend, they might be doing whatever. Mm. Yeah, I accept that some of the time that people spend on phones is possibly, you know, just entertaining themselves on a game or an amusing video. Okay, that's got that space as well, but it isn't carte blanche just a waste of time. You know, we communicate in so many different ways.
Well, yeah, I'm a massive technologist. I mean, I love it.
Yes,
and I've always addressed it. I've always wanted to do it. I moved out of
so you're probably what they call an early adopter of things like
kind
that.
I guess,
whereas
so.
I'm sort of somewhere in the middle of that bell curve, going, "Ooh, what's all this going on? I would have some.
Want to do something with
I would
it.
Have some technology."
Yeah. Well, in the early days, I've you know, I think there's the common link, actually, well, that common link is your dad about mountaineering and things.
Yeah, of course.
Which was quite interesting, because when I set out, I was designing mountaineering kit.
Yeah.
But actually what I wanted to do was design it on screen. I wanted to, you know, right. Very early days.
Yeah.
Very okay. Early days.
Yeah, visualise it.
You know, the personal computer didn't exist. This is early 80s.
Mm.
But there were the large corporates were cutting, laser cutting and things, which is all stuff now. But I want—that's what I really wanted to do. So that's why I kind of moved into that idea of technology.
Right.
But this now that it's so accessible, and you can do anything and everything. You can literally think it up and almost have an app or something that'll visualize it in some way for you. It's provided a sort of like a new world.
Mm.
That one has to sort of try and keep up with.
Yeah.
And rather than sort of looking to your fathers and
looking down the generations of what's coming rather than what's been before.
Which is exciting.
Interesting example of that happened for me, mentioning Dad, at Kendall Mountain Festival 2 weekends ago.
Oh, right.
There was a tribute the show, almost tribute event to him, put together by Paul Diffley, who's a filmmaker.
Yep.
Hot Aches is his company, and they made a film about the first ascent of St John's Head on Hoy, which Dad did with Oliver Hill
right.
a long, long time ago, and it took them a week, and it was thought to be the kind of the hardest climb in Britain at the time, and then it was redone. And they made a film about the re-climbing of it, which was done in a day by a climber called Dave McLeod, I think, and he soloed it. And the last pitches, really, it's an amazing film. It's called The Long Hope.
Okay.
So that was 2011. A dad died this year, and when I was letting Paul know, things went off in his creative mind, and he knew he had some other footage, and he made a couple of short films. Honouring some of Dad's other climbs, so A Dream of White Horses on Anglesey, and the Great Wall on Snowdon above the lake.
Are their names there?
I mean, I'm not intimately familiar with them, although I have climbed Dream of White Horses with Dad. And so, I think just sort of talking about how technology changes. So what Paul put together was very different 8 years on. In 2011 he made a film, which was a great film, and I'd recommend it to anybody, but this time it was a blend. His show was a blend of live ambient music from one of these old synthesizers that sort of lifts up in a suitcase, and somebody connects the wires into different
Moogie type thing.
I don't know, but anyway, that was amazing,
right?
Coupled with archive footage in film, coupled with spoken word, coupled with film and the recreation of the climbs I just mentioned, and some live music too from me singing, and it was a blend of all sorts of things, which it wouldn't happen eight years ago.
No.
You know, and the sentiment around Dad dying online. I would never have had any idea 8 years ago or earlier of receiving any of it.
Right.
You know, largely positive, I've got to say. Technology, the internet, speed of communication, how quickly news travels, and particularly within a certain community like the climbing community, you know.
Yeah. Well,
fascinating.
It is fascinating.
Where will it be in another 8 years?
Well, I some of the things that you dream up, you know, and do. The communication thing is the big one. I've kind of live in this strange sort of bit where I need to get out in the outside.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't need the technology.
Yeah.
And, you know, I get a buzz from being in the mountains. I'm a mountaineer rather than a climber.
Outdoors, yes.
Yeah. So I don't know the rock climbs, but I do know some of the big walks and things, sort of big sort of mountaineering stuff, which is.
It just all comes under being outside, really, doesn't it?
Yes, you know? And I've spent my life doing it. So that's things. But one thing that really upsets me when you hear these people being stuck on BBC News And they sat on a satellite phone from the top of Everest saying, I'm on Everest.
Yes,
And you think somehow that doesn't, that's kind of almost like the pinnacle of their career, is just being able to get on a satellite phone, stood on the top of Everest. The fact they've got 300 people waiting to do the same thing.
You just think, oh my God,
it's a nightmare scenario as far as I'm concerned, and a lot of people, I'm sure. But this idea that you kind of, it's all sanitized, that really kind of doesn't work for me. So I can get rid of the technology.
Yeah,
I think people probably wouldn't believe me, but I can do without it. But it's interesting, how do you predict how it's going, and where is it going? You already said, what's going to do in 8 years' time? Who knows?
Who knows? But even if you've got an inkling that's half right, you're probably likely to do well from that financially, if that's important to you. Somebody posted this morning that I saw about Elon Musk and his SpaceX endeavors, and that he failed three times and didn't have any money for the fourth time, but succeeded on the fourth time. It's just, we're talking about colonizing other planets. Finally, actually, not just dreaming it and thinking. There's a plan. Somebody is pursuing it.
He's a very interesting individual, and I do follow him and hear about it. But he has this. PayPal was his.
That's right. Yeah.
That was where he got to, and he did it with I think it was his brother, originally.
Right. Okay.
So they got their money, and then they just started speculating. Mm. But that brought in other money, which is now funding everything else. So, I mean, I'm a big fan of the Teslas and so on, and have been. In fact, I very nearly bought one back in the little. Then they copied the Lotus.
Yeah.
And it was a mad car at the time, and kind of haven't really changed, but it's become more mainstream.
Yeah.
Now. But you did a demonstration, did you see it on the
van? I heard about this.
Or they're not van, it was a truck. Something.
Yeah.
It looked like, it looked like the DeLorean.
Yes. Yeah.
Was it Back to the Future?
Yeah.
Anyway, they were going to do a demonstration, the fact that it was indestructible. And they got a steel ball.
Yeah.
And some guy came on and chucked it at the window, and it smashed it.
Right.
And Musk was going, Oh, do the other one.
Bugger.
And it smashed it. It smashed it again. So he spent the entire presentation stood in front of his van with two smashed windows.
Mm.
Guess how many pre-sales they got as a result of that interview.
Well, I imagine. And I heard that his stock went down, but I bet they still pre-sold tons. What do you know?
200,000 trucks.
Pre-ordered. Oh my word! I think it goes beyond what happened just in that event, then, doesn't it? And it goes. There's a buy-in. And whether these people are early adopters, but there's a buy-in, emotionally, psychologically, financially, to progression in how you even make a truck. Okay, maybe the windows went in, but they'll deal with it. They'll get around that.
Well, these early adopters are saying, by the time they get to them, they won't get these trucks until the end of 2020 at the earliest.
Yeah.
I mean, that's going to be the earliest.
By then, they'll be dealt with.
That's the way Musk did. He just said, we've got work in progress. Kind of laughed it over. But I think if you were reading his body language and everything else, he was seething.
It's
all gone wrong, they told me. And then he then posted on the, which is what I was getting at, 10 minutes later, he says, this is what it did in our practice, our press rehearsal.
Right,
and you see him throwing the ball. And they said, actually, because we hit it, I think they hit it with a sledgehammer.
Yes. Okay.
And then they threw the ball at it. Well, they threw thrown the ball at it first.
Yeah.
This steel ball.
Yeah.
And then hit it with a sledgehammer.
Yeah.
But they reckon they cracked the glass as part of the sledgehammering routine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But it was that sort of thing, and you think, okay. But he can do no wrong.
Mm.
But at the moment, I think he's probably got shareholders tied up for about, is it $5 billion?
Oh, really?
In various enterprises. Some unbelievable amount of money.
I've never operated in anything even remotely like that.
No.
That field numbers to do with money. I've never really particularly had lots of money.
No.
Sort of enough to get by reasonably well. Nothing very extravagant, so it is incomprehensible.
But I think it's we were talking about our businesses and things like this. These they have to be sustainable. That isn't, absolutely isn't sustainable.
Yes, absolutely.
But he still flogs 200,000 trucks.
Yeah.
And there's Tesla still the leading electric vehicle, and et cetera, et cetera. And he's getting there by hook or by crook. And I admire him for that sort of, you know, getting the people behind him.
Tenacity.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. But he is setting a standard, which I think will be superseded quite quickly when the big guys, you know, the BMWs and the Mercs and the Toyotas and things start bringing their... Well, because the build quality. If I was building buying a car or even lease renting it, you know, £1,000 a month or whatever it is to get something that sort of scale, I think you would want a quality...
I guess so.
And at the moment, I'm sure Tesla will get there, but it's exactly the same thing with selling the trucks.
Yeah.
They won't have breakable windows by the time they actually get them on the road.
Build quality, you're right, because as we were talking about earlier, I'm in the midst of changing cars, and having had a less than positive experience with the one that I no longer have, I am thinking about something like an Audi, which I've never had an Audi, but... makes me feel like it's build quality just by almost sort of, you know, sort of osmotic heritage of, you know, Audis are good is somewhere in my brain, having had a negative experience. So I'm, you know, on the cusp of buying an Audi.
We've been talking about, we amongst our groups and things, about marketing and branding and all this sort of stuff, and I'm a big Audi fan, but mainly because I bought one of the original Audi Quattros back in the 80s.
Yeah.
And there was only six in the country at the time.
And you had one.
And I had one.
But
we were bought into the idea. It was a four-wheel drive.
Yeah.
And they'd got their rallying thing. And this was the road version.
Yeah.
And it turns out to be iconic.
Mm.
But at the time, it was, you know, fantastic.
Yeah.
People thought they were indestructible.
So you're giving me a thumbs up for maybe buying an Audi.
Well, the thing, what I was going to getting at is that they caught this, that started off this Vorsprung Duo technique.
Yes.
And they've gone and re-brought it back again, 30 plus years.
I didn't know
if
that.
If you look at any Audi.
And doesn't that mean progress through technology or something like that?
Yes, or the excellence.
Excellence through
it. You've got me there because I don't know it.
It was something like that.
Idea, the excellence. But this Vorsprung Duo technique came out with the Quattro, and then they died. You didn't hear about it for 20-30 years, and I think it's only this year
that
they now
kind of gone back to
the final strap line on all the modern adverts is just a Vorsprung Duo technique. That's
right.
It doesn't even say it. In the old days, it said it. Yes. Thing I seem to remember.
Yes, it did.
And so it's just funny how, you know, these things are cyclical, and they're now selling the Audi as an electric car. But the history behind it
is it's what you say about brand, isn't it? Somewhere in my brain, there is a message that's been absorbed and believed that I can rely on an Audi.
Yeah. I mean, I think
we'll see.
Yes.
I buy one tomorrow. We'll see.
Well, I don't think I'd. We sat in a VW, and I don't think they're any better, and it's gone through a very dodgy sort of, you know, we're in a diesel vehicle, and I bought it for exactly the same reasons everybody else bought it in, 9 years ago, and now it looks like a bit of a dud. But, you know, what do you do? You know, how do you anticipate things? So you're saying, what's going to happen in 10 years time?
Yeah.
Are we all going to drive
electric
cars?
It'll be interesting to see. It feels like it, doesn't it, at the minute? But who knows? It'll be interesting to see.
I think, I think we're living Sheffield here. There's a company that's doing hydrogen cells.
Okay.
And they've just brought 20 odd cars in from Japan,
right,
to try them out.
Yeah, I only vaguely know something about that. Isn't the byproduct water or something?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Yes, yeah, so it's no emissions, etc., etc.
I mean, you know, theoretically, if that's right and that works, and you know, it's at least reasonable in terms of our expectations of range and economy and performance, that has to be, on the face of it, an absolute no-brainer of the way everything will go.
Who knows? You know, Betamax versus VHS. You know, we all know
because with electric cars, aren't there questions about the generation of the storage, the battery kind of thing.
Yeah.
There's a payoff there somewhere to create that
An
economy of what you actually use.
Specialized metals,
right?
You know, the sort of idea that you're raiding you know, earth resource. I think there's a lot of questions you need to ask about.
Complex world.
Yeah, very complex. And you know, but as you say, what picks up? Are we going to drive electric cars? Are we going to use our resources better? And things like this.
Well, hopefully.
And, you know, and I think, I was just saying, coming back to what we were talking about earlier, really, was the idea that I'm looking not to find the answers in my elders. It's actually the youngsters and the people.
I like that very sharing. Much. I like that very much, Martin. I have a nearly 20-year-old daughter, and increasingly, and now, in fact, almost really by default, if I want to know something, I'm going to ask her.
Yes.
I'm going to ask her. Yeah. You know, I'm going to ask her how she feels about the election. I'm going to ask her how she feels about the future and all those things.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, I think we should. I mean, I've got, we spoke about earlier, you know, 3 kids.
Amongst other people, but yeah. Yes, asking downwards is, I think, yeah, I think that's a good idea.
My, as you know, my parents are still alive, and they have a, I think the way, nice way of putting it, was a tired view of the world, because they just, it's kind of too much.
Yeah.
Which is not a criticism per
se.
No.
It's just an observation.
Yeah. And I encourage them to try and, you know, understand their grandchildren. They're not me. And you know, we were talking about, you know, where they can go, what their decision is making.
Yeah.
You know, now the resources. I'm looking at sustainable housing. You can come and scroll all these things. Yeah. You can tap into. I can help, and but I want people to feed me stuff that, know, information or something, and we do share it. It's quite, I mean, it's, I makes me feel younger, I think.
good.
I don't want to stop.
That's a good thing, you know, whatever your physical age happens to be, feeling younger's got to be a good thing.
Exactly.
Puts me in mind of a lyric of mine, and a song, which is called Older Than I Look, Younger Than I Feel.
Right.
Because as I turned 50, I was lucky enough to get one or two compliments. Oh, you don't look 50 and all that kind of stuff. And I was like, oh, thanks, you know, sort of lapping it up. So sort of, I am actually older than I look. So, you know, great. But then, you know, there are days when you're like, you know, I'm actually younger than I feel.
Yes.
So there we go.
Well,
that's another conversation for another day.
It is another conversation.
Lyrics and songwriting.
Well, I think you know we're going to have to watch our time. We are, actually. See, this is what happens.
Yeah.
We can have some really interesting stuff.
Yeah.
Music, or just finish on the idea of music, because it's a nice way of saying it. Because you're, you play the guitar, don't you?
I play the guitar.
Do you play anything else?
No.
You don't?
No, not really.
So you write lyrics, that was the...
Yes. Try and articulate this thing we're all in, this life. In some sort of way, it allows me to scratch my creative itch, you know.
Right, oh, that's good.
And I think art in any form is just so important and valid, and so frequently overlooked, you know. So whether it's me singing and writing a song as best I can about something that hopefully resonates, or whether it's somebody picking up a paintbrush or making digital art. Or the spoken word, whatever it is, it's just such an integral and important part of this world
being.
And life and being. Yeah.
Yes. No, I agree entirely. I mean, I listened to your lyrics.
Oh, okay. Good.
Up till now, quite recently, I never listened to lyrics. It was really funny.
Well, we are going to have another conversation because I am the same. I even though I'm a writer, a songwriter in that sense, lyricist. I when I listen to something, it's never the lyrics first. It's the music and the melody and something, and then if that hooks me and catches me and makes me feel something, then I start listening to the lyrics.
Right.
Very strange.
Well, there you are. I thought I was. Well, I am. I think I am unusual. Or we are. When I talk about people, they seem to be able to just throw out these lyrics. Either completely over my head. Now, the music is what instills.
Yeah,
I mean,
me
I
too.
Get something else.
Yeah,
so,
for me too.
Eclectic, I think, was the way you describe things, but you know, like I do into my jazz or something like that.
Yeah.
But it evokes something.
Yes.
Much more than the lyrics, I think.
Yeah.
But then
And then the ultimate sweet spot has happened to me recently with a song. I really liked the hook and what the music was doing. It made me listen to the lyrics, and oh my God, the lyrics were so good at that exact time in that moment in that song. And you get that sweet spot, and it's just transformative to me in that moment. It brings you some power and happiness, or internal.
And you feel younger.
And you feel younger.
Time.
Yes.
Right. Excellent. That was good. I enjoyed that.
Me too.
So let's close it off.
Edit that
so
as you think is appropriate. There might be some rambling
probably
or whatever.
Edit it all, whatever. So, Howard, thank you very much.
A pleasure. Yeah.
Great.
Likewise. I look forward to the next one.